The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, happy good. I'm trying to think what to. Oh, this is not any special weekend, right? Except for maybe Little Five coming up. So if you are a Little 500 follower here at Indiana University, have a great weekend. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but regardless, I'm sure it will go off with a bang. So I had to rush from Indianapolis to Bloomington on this Thursday to do a recording with Mary Beth Franklin. I'm excited about this. She's the country's leading expert on Social Security and Medicare and an award-winning journalist. She obviously been on this show several times. She offers in-person and online seminars about Social Security, Medicare, retirement income planning. She's a former contributing columnist on retirement issues for Investment News. She's been everywhere. Mary Beth is the host of a public television program called Social Security and You. Her ebook, Maximizing Social Security Benefits, is available, of course, at marybethfranklin.com. That's been a popular gift that people have given folks who are approaching that magical age. Editor and publisher recognized Mary Beth on retirement column Investment News with an EPPY award. I'm going to have to get with her on exactly what that was for Best Business Blog. Well, there you go. You have 2021. Back in 2016, the Women's Institute for a Secure Retirement honored Mary Beth with a Hero Award for her efforts to improve retirement security for women. She also served on the CFP board, a Women's Initiative Council with focused on improving gender and racial diversity in the financial services profession, and that's been working pretty well. Being almost 30 years in the business, I can tell you that it was an old white man's business when I first started. I'm not saying it still isn't that, but there's certainly a lot more diversity, both from you know, females in there and people of color. It's great. I mean, we go to the conferences now. It's just great to see the diversity in the room. And then we need that. You know, not everyone wants to take advice from an old white dude. And I'm not an old white dude yet, but I'm getting there. And I just appreciate everybody and everything that Mary Beth has done. Mary Beth also served as a tax and retirement editor for Kiplinger Personal Finance. That's when I met her. And the editor of the Annual Retirement Planning Guide, which actually featured my dad, Jerry, in it in 2007. I'm sure we'll reflect a little bit on that when we get her on the phone. Earlier in her career, Mary Beth was a Capitol Hill reporter for United Press International. She's a frequent guest on numerous radio and television programs and also hosts her own podcast, The Retirement Repair Shop. So we're looking forward to getting Mary Beth on in just a few minutes. But before we do that, we have some IRS news, because the 2024 RMDs, required minimum distributions for IRA beneficiaries, back in 2021, they said, nope, you don't have to take RMDs. 2022, nope, you don't have to take RMDs. 2023, nope, you don't have to take RMDs. And now they're also excusing the 2024 missed RMDs for those non-eligible designated beneficiaries. Now, what does that mean? I don't know why they keep doing this, but I guess they're like, well, we're already 4 years into it. Screw it. We'll just go ahead and let them keep it in there for 10 years and not have to take it out until then. But this is the fourth year in a row that the IRS has waived those annual RMDs. Now, still subject to that 10-year rule, they have to have it all out. But even though 2021 and through 2024 RMDs are not required, you may still want to take withdrawals from those accounts. Understand that tax rates are very, very low, and they will be going up permanently, I believe, in the year 2026. So why would you continue to wait? I just think that people are wired that way. I don't have to take it, so why should I take it? I don't need the money, so why should I take the money? I think I keep coming back to required minimum distributions. Think about it as required maximum distributions. That came directly from our visit with Ed Slott not too long ago. Of course, all this brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate, including my golf cart, which I have not heard when it's going to go, but keep checking. KennyBlandAuctions.com. It's a black one all jacked up. Been beat up a little bit, but it still runs really great. Gas-powered, too. And Attorney Elliott's Hike at the Lyke Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. I think it's cool if you buy my golf cart, let me know, and then maybe we'll take it for a spin together. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Mary Beth Franklin, the country's leading expert on Social Security and Medicare, will be our guest. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Mary Beth Franklin, the country's leading expert on Social Security and Medicare, as I promised, joins us now on the phone. Mary Beth, I've known you since the mid-2000s when you were at Kiplinger. You did an article on my dad when he was transitioning kind of out of banking, and then he ended up getting back into banking, and now he's going to retire from banking again to fire back up his real estate career. And I think it was a late boomer's guide to retirement, and believe it or not, he was like in his late 50s at the time when you did that article. So it's incredible how much time has passed. But I was telling folks before you came on a little bit about your past, you know, all the way back from your United Press International days on Capitol Hill, you know, into being a contributing editor at Investment News, backing that up a little bit into your Kiplinger days and the annual retirement planning guide that you were always responsible for, and the diversity that you've been promoting in our field, because I was kind of joking, but it wasn't really a joke, that but when I started 29 years ago, it was an old white man's business, and you've done it. You've done a good job of promoting diversity in our business, and it's great when I go to conferences now and see a lot of females, a lot of people of color. It's awesome to see the diversity in the financial services field. I'm not saying it's still an old white man's field, but it definitely has changed a lot. And you've seen so much change over the years that you've been doing this. How many years have you been covering this kind of stuff?
Well, I think I've spent my entire adult life writing about retirement in some way, shape, or form, starting in my 20s. And now I've gotten to the age where I can consider retiring, at least part-time. But I think your dad, Jerry, was the poster boy for the baby boomer generation of how to reinvent retirement over and over again, that so many people find that, yeah, they might want to give up what has been their career for decades, but they still want to stay engaged in something, whether it's an offshoot of that, a new business, consulting, volunteer working, but people do love to keep those social connections, and working is a way to do it. And for people who are concerned about not having enough money to last them the rest of their lives, which can be a really long time, having some income through part-time work means that amount of money you're not taking out of your retirement savings at the moment and allowing it to continue to grow.
We have a lot of people driving cars for local dealerships, maybe delivering auto parts to mechanics, picking up part-time work at Lowe's, whatever it might be. I saw a client of mine, certainly didn't need to work, but I saw him at a establishment recently, and he was selling golf clubs. You know, he loves the golf. You see them at the golf clubs. You know, yeah, that's great. You got to keep part of the social aspect of it too. It isn't all about the money. I think Jerry Sedler, who wrote a book called "Don't Retire, Rewire," we always talk about why do you work beyond the paycheck. It certainly helps stretch your nest egg when you're picking up a few bucks along the way doing something you're having fun doing. But Mary Beth, going back to my first question. Going back to your days at United Press International, all the way through Kiplinger into Investment News, and obviously on your own now doing podcasts and appearances on TV and radio, teaching classes online and in person on retirement issues, Medicare, Social Security. You've seen a lot change. I mean, I've seen a lot change. You've seen a lot change as well over the past 35, 40 years.
You know, it's funny when you started out talking about how this originally, financial planning was an old white guy's profession. You know, we used to talk about it being old, male, and pale. And that is changing. And part of it, yes, I'd like to say the importance of diversity and inclusion, but really it's a business solution, because 30 years ago, most of your clients probably looked like you, old, male, and pale.
Oh, come on, and Mary frankly, Beth. Not old. I'm not that old yet. 54.
That's huge.
I'm not taking offense to it. It's okay. I'm owning it.
But increasingly, people who are using financial advisors, and I think most people should use financial advisors, they're increasingly women, people of color. Think of people starting their own businesses, people who are divorced and starting their finances all over again, people who are widowed, people who have second families. These are all really good reasons to consult a financial advisor. And a lot of times people want to talk to someone who looks and sounds like them. So the business model for expanding financial planning practices is to have a broader stable of financial advisors that can serve a broad population of clients.
Amen to that. Let's take a quick break. We'll get back into our next segment and really dig into some of those things and reason why you do need a financial advisor, especially when you're dealing with complicated things that seem somewhat easy on the surface. That, of course, is Social Security, Medicare. We get into all kinds of things, including if you've been divorced, if you're widowed, and all of that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Mary Beth Franklin is my guest. You can go to marybethfranklin.com, pick up the Maximizing Social Security Benefits. It is a great document, great reference guide, especially if you are approaching that magical age. And also, she's a frequent guest, of course, on numerous radio programs, been gracious enough to participate in this show for many, many years, and television programs as well. And she also hosts her own podcast. And I want you guys to, they follow the podcast, Mary Beth, that we tell them follows. They follow David McKnight. They follow Ed Slott in the retirement debate. They follow the 2025 Final Drive Mine. They follow these people because they're contributors to the show. So, folks, go to the Retirement Repair Shop in your little place where you get your podcast and save it and subscribe to it and make it pop up and give you alerts when we have a new one. So a lot of fun stuff going on. Mary Beth, I know when it comes to Social Security, people are like, well, you know, when, what ages can I take it? What age should I take it? Should I wait to take it? If I want to work, and can I still take Social Security? A lot of these seem basic to you and I, but when you're facing this for the very first time, it's not that basic.
You're right, because Social Security, one, people are invested in this, literally, because they've paid FICA taxes, payroll taxes, their entire careers, and that's what funds current Social Security benefits. So people feel really strongly about this because, hey, it's my money, I earned it. But that realization often prompts people to claim Social Security benefits earlier, maybe sooner than they should. So the first thing I stress to people is just decide when to claim Social Security benefits is a very personal decision. But the first thing to know is if you claim before your full retirement age, your benefits are going to be permanently reduced. If you're born in 1960 or later, your full retirement age is 67. Yes, you can claim as early as 62, but in your case, that would be 5 years early, and your benefits would be permanently reduced by 30%. On top of that, if you claim your benefits before your full retirement age, and here's the key, and you continue to work, having earnings either from a job or self-employment, and you make too much money, which this year is about $22,000 a year, not only will you receive reduced benefits for claiming early, but then those benefits could be further reduced by something called the earnings restrictions if you make too much money. So the first thing I say is if you plan to keep working, just don't claim Social Security before your full retirement age because it just doesn't make sense.
So let's talk about a couple other things when it comes to considerations. One, obviously, working and taking benefits too early, maybe probably not a great idea. Two, what if you took it early and you said, you know, I don't think I'm going to work. Then all of a sudden, voila, you have an opportunity. You do have a chance to kind of push that reset button, right, and say, okay, forget it. I didn't really want to take Social Security early. There's a time period where you can kind of reset that clock.
Absolutely. There's actually two do-over opportunities. The first one is anyone who claims Social Security benefits has up to 12 months to change their mind. If, say, you started Social Security and 3 months later you get a job and say, wow, I guess I don't really need that Social Security, you can withdraw your application by filing Form 521. You can do that on the phone or online or in person. And that basically says, I'm withdrawing my application. But there's a catch. You have to repay any benefits you have received. And if anyone has collected benefits on your earnings record, such as a spouse or a minor child, you have to repay those benefits too. Why would you want to do that? Well, it wipes the slate clean as if you've never claimed Social Security. So at a later date, when you're older, you would be getting a bigger monthly benefit as if for the first time. You can also, if you say get a job, even if you're past that 12 months, you want to call Social Security and say, hey, my situation has changed. I'm now working. Because that way they can adjust your benefits. If you're making too much money, they'll withhold benefits until you satisfy this earnings restrictions. Because if you don't tell them, and when they finally match up your tax returns and your earnings records, it could be 2 or 3 years down the road, and then they say, oh, look at that. We paid you $30,000 2 months. We'd like you to repay us right now in a lump sum. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to get a surprise letter like that. So if you claim Social Security and you're below full retirement age, you can change your mind within the first 12 months, or if your work situation changes, you should notify Social Security so they can adjust your benefits.
I want to talk. Go ahead. Yeah, right. I want to talk briefly about taxation of benefits and when that kind of came on the scene, and how it hasn't really changed much as far as the limits that you would earn before you're subject to taxation. I think people get earnings limitations and taxation of benefits confused sometimes.
Oh, I agree with you. Let's go to taxation of benefits. That came in as a result of the 1983 Social Security reforms. For the first time, up to 50% of Social Security benefits could be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate if your combined income, which is essentially everything on your tax return, plus half of your Social Security benefits, plus if you have any tax-exempt interest, if you invest in municipal bonds. If all that's added together, that's called your combined income. If you're single and that combined income exceeds $25,000, or if you're married and your combined income exceeds $32,000, now some of your Social Security benefits are going to be subject to income taxes. Those are extremely low thresholds that were set in 1983 and have never been adjusted for inflation. So that means every year when Social Security beneficiaries receive a cost of living adjustment, naturally more and more people are going to get bumped into the situation where they're paying taxes on at least some of their benefits. Then about 10 or 15 years later in the 90s, another tax was added for higher income retirees that rather than just 50% of their benefits being taxable, up to 85% of their Social Security benefits could be taxed at their ordinary income tax rate. And that's where it remains today.
It's crazy because some things in our tax code have always been indexed with inflation. Some things have not. And that's one thing that has not. The other thing that has not is our the 3.8% surtax, investment surtax. That's still the same as it was back when the Affordable Care Act came into play. So it's kind of a strange thing, but that's just the way it is. Interesting, when you go back into the 80s, you know, Social Security was in a crisis then. They came together. There's a great picture of Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill and Bob Dole and George Bush Sr. and all of them kind of gathered around signing this thing into law. They also put delay credits in back then. They extended the Social Security age. That's when they said anyone born after 1960 would be eligible for full benefits at 67, which is somewhat ironic when you think about how we're going to fix this thing going forward. And we're going to take a break and come back and talk about this. But if you think about it, in 1983, 1984, a person born in 1960, they were like my son's age, right? 23, 24. Who in the heck was even worried about when they could take Social Security? So when we come back, let's talk about the solvency of Social Security and maybe some of the fixes that are going to be coming. We'll take a quick break. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes, Social Security and Medicare expert Mary Beth Franklin is on the phone with me, and she's been a frequent guest on the show over the years. We appreciate her taking her precious time to educate us all. Now, Mary Beth, of course, you talked about people taking Social Security early in the last segment, and a lot of them are like, I'm taking Social Security because it's going broke and it's not going to be there for me. We've been there before, folks. It was in the 80s. We had a brief tweak in the 90s, and you know, here we are facing the solvency issue again with Social Security here in the next decade. And I think for people, Mary Beth, that say that, they need to understand that there are a lot of fixes in the works, and I don't know that's going to happen anytime soon, just like in 83, 84 era. They're right up against the ropes. Nothing seems to happen in America until we have a crisis on our hands. Then everyone seems to magically pull together and make something happen. Talk a little bit about the solvency and some of the fixes that you see as somewhat of an insider that's on the way.
You're right, David. Back in 1983, Social Security was in danger of not being able to pay full benefits for the first time. And Congress stepped in at the last minute to approve a package of reforms that would get the system back on track. As you mentioned, one of the things they did was saying, all right, we're going to gradually raise the full retirement age, which back then was 65, to 67 for people born in 1960 or later. What was so brilliant about this solution, in my opinion, was they basically phased it in over a more than 40-year period. That legislation was passed in 1983, 39 years ago. 41 years ago.
Right.
And it's not really fully implemented until 2027 when people born in 1960 reach age 67. So that was very good public policy, I think. Social Security is too important to basic American retirement security to let benefits be cut. I just don't see Congress saying to 70 million people, hey, we're going to cut your benefits by 20%. I think they will do something. I think many of the changes will be forward-looking, things like, well, do we maybe gradually raise the full retirement age again to 70? But you're talking today's two-year-olds. They're going to get used to it. They'll probably live to 120. I think two of the big problems with the finding of Social Security is, one, demographics. Americans are having fewer babies than they did before, and you have this huge baby boomer generation that is retiring and drawing benefits. Part of it rectifies itself when the baby boomers die. There could be some temporary need for some sort of general revenue transfer. Maybe the FICA taxes alone won't be enough 10 years from now, and the excess revenues, the trust fund reserves will be drawn down. They might have to draw money from someplace else. They may have to look at the way that the money that's brought in from FICA taxes is invested so it earns a higher return. Traditionally, Social Security funds have always been invested in special issue government funds only available to the Social Security Trust Fund that earns about 2%, even in the days when the stock market was returning 20%. And I think one of the biggest challenges is as wage inequality has grown, so mm-hmm. many people make so much money, but Social Security taxes are only applied up to a certain wage base this year, each year. And this year it's $168,600, meaning anyone who makes more than that are not paying FICA taxes for Social Security purposes. Back in 1983, the Greenspan Commission that approved the Social Security reforms said as long as 90% of U.S. wages were being taxed for FICA purposes, Social Security would never run out of money. But the problem is so many people make more than that $168,000 and change right now that only about 83% of U.S. wages are being taxed for FICA purposes. So that's one possibility. Do we let that taxable wage base float up higher so more wages are being taxed to fund Social Security? There's all sorts of things Congress can do on both the revenue side, the benefit side, the investing side, but it all comes down to politics. It requires leadership from the White House. It requires bipartisan cooperation, both which are in short supply right now. I don't see any changes before the 2024 presidential election. I'm not sure how soon we would see a fix after that. It could come right down to the wire around 2034. I don't know when, but I am convinced they will do something to save the system.
So let's assume that the system is saved, and I think that's a good assumption. Let's get to some of the claiming strategies that are still pretty popular. Of course, the era of the so-called aggressive strategies kind of came to an abrupt halt back in November of 2015. But there's still some very tactical moves that remain out there on a case-by-case basis. You know, obviously, you're a married couple. There's about three or four different scenarios there. Married, but then divorced. Married, but then widowed. Younger children when you're eligible for benefits. So let's take 5, 6, 7 minutes and try to do our very best to at least hit on each one of these, and again, to make people aware of it, not to solve all the answers and have all the solutions today.
Well, the first thing for people to understand is, yes, if you claim benefits at your full retirement age, you get 100% of your promised benefits. But for every year you postpone claiming your Social Security beyond your full retirement age, up until age 70, you get an extra 8% per year. So if your full retirement age is 67 and you wait until the maximum age of age 70 to claim, you are going to get 124% of your promised benefits. Let's compare that to claiming your benefits as soon as possible at age 62, where in that case you'd only get 70% of your benefits for claiming 5 years early. The difference between claiming as soon as possible at age 62 versus as late as possible at age 70 means you would increase your monthly Social Security benefit by 77% for the rest of your life. That is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So what I say to married couples is, when possible, have one spouse, preferably the one with the bigger Social Security benefit, who is often the husband, who is often older, to wait until age 70 to claim the biggest Social Security benefit possible. And if he dies first, which is actuarially likely, that biggest retirement benefit is likely going to translate into the biggest possible survivor benefit for his surviving widow. Now, having said that, the other spouse, I'm assuming the wife in this case, if she's not working at 62 and has her own Social Security benefit, she may want to go ahead and claim early at 62. Yes, her benefit would be permanently reduced, but it brings some Social Security income into the household, takes a bit of the sting away of having the husband wait. And here's something that most people don't understand. Even though her retirement benefits would be permanently reduced because she's claiming them early, it would have no impact on her survivor benefit. Right. She is at least full retirement age when she's widowed. She would still step up to a survivor benefit worth 100% of what her husband was collecting, including any of those delayed retirement credits.
So what about people that have been married and then maybe, you know, for 10, 20, 25, 30 years even, and then divorced? Let's talk a little bit about that scenario.
The key for benefits for eligible divorced spouses is you must have been married at least 10 years, not a day short of that, and you're divorced and in most cases currently single. If that is the case, you were married at least 10 years, divorced and currently single, and your benefit as a spouse is larger than your own retirement benefit, you would be able to claim spousal benefits on your ex. A spousal benefit is worth half of your ex-spouse's full retirement age benefit if you are at least full retirement age when you claim it. In addition, if you have been divorced at least 2 years and you and your ex are both at least 62 years old and eligible for benefits, you may be able to collect on your ex's earning record, even if your ex has not yet claimed Social Security. A currently married couple can't do that, but a divorced spouse can. Now, here's another wrinkle. We've talked about how Social Security benefits have more than 2,700 rules that govern your benefits. There's a lot of exceptions. A lot of exceptions apply to divorced spouses. And here is another one. While it is true you have to be married at least 10 years, divorced, and currently single in order to claim benefits on a living ex, if you wait until age 60 or later to remarry, you can't collect on a living ex. But if your ex dies, you can collect survivor benefits on your ex even if you're married to someone else.
We had that exact scenario happen a few years ago. The lady had been dating this person for a long time, decided to get married. I'm like, you know what? If you'd wait until October, you could do this claiming strategy. But if you get married now in May, that's off the table. And they had a very lovely October wedding, Mary Beth. So it worked out really well. So knowing your claiming strategies could very well dictate your marriage schedule as well. Let's take a break. Go ahead.
Why it's so important to work with a financial advisor, because if that lady didn't have you, she would have lost out on a really valuable benefit.
Oh, ton of money. All right, let's take a quick break, come back. Let's get into Medicare, because I know people are like, yes, I'm on Medicare. And then you're like, uh-oh, I didn't realize Medicare costs so much. And then if you do some things like have a lot of extra income, it even costs more. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Mary Beth Franklin is one of the country's leading experts on Social Security and Medicare, and obviously you could tell that by our previous conversations. Let's move into Medicare, Mary Beth, because I know people still, we talked about ages for Social Security, you know, 66 and 8 months, 10 months, 67, 62, but they confuse that when it comes to Medicare, because Medicare is still 65, which was the original retirement date back in 1935-36 when they established Social Security in the first place and the Medicare later on. But 65, you're eligible for Medicare. And I do think it surprises some people when they jump into Medicare, all the different costs that are involved.
You're right, David. A lot of people falsely assume, hey, I sign up for Medicare at 65 and I'll never pay another dime in health insurance. Well, you couldn't be more wrong. Medicare Part A, which covers hospitalization, is called premium-free. Basically, you paid for it your whole life through your FICA taxes. But your Medicare Part B, which is essentially your health insurance, when you see doctors and get lab tests and outpatients visits, that has a monthly premium that this year, 2024, is roughly $175 a month for most Medicare beneficiaries. But depending on your income, you could be paying a lot more for that Medicare Part B, as much as nearly $600 a month per person. If you have two spouses, each over 65, they are each paying for their own Medicare benefits. Now, in addition to that, most people who choose what we call original Medicare or traditional Medicare, as Medicare Part A, hospitalization, Medicare Part B, health insurance with a monthly premium. You may have a Medicare Part D prescription drug plan, which also has a monthly premium and is also subject to high income surcharges if you have a high income. And then you need to fill the gaps in between with a supplemental Medigap policy to help pay those deductibles and copayments. Now, other people increasingly are choosing what they call Medicare Advantage. It's an all-in-one package, Medicare A, B, D, all wrapped together, run by private health insurance companies. But you still have to pay for that. And if your income is above certain thresholds, you're going to pay more. And in 2024, those thresholds are, if your income is single and it's over $103,000, you're going to pay extra. Double that for married couples. If your joint income is above $206,000, you're going to pay extra.
And that's a cliff tax, right? Because it's $1 over. It's not like our tax system, which is marginal, which means the next dollar you pay at 12, the next dollar you pay at 22 or 24. It's if you're at, you know, 2061, then you are now in the twilight zone of that next premium payment.
Exactly. $1 over and you skyrocket into the next bracket.
So they look back 2 years on income. So we're in 2024, so they're looking at your 2022 income. I had a client and his wife, high income earners, just retired, worked about 3 or 4 months into this year, planned to do a pretty sizable Roth conversion this year. They're paying massive Medicare premiums because of his income when he worked back in 2022. Talk a little bit about some of the, I forget the exact terminology, but it's a income-related monthly adjustment thing that you can apply for. Or I call it a Medicare premium waiver, but go ahead.
It's called IRMA, Income-Related Monthly Adjustment Amount. It's a hurricane for your health care costs in retirement, let me tell you. And you're right, they look at your last available federal tax return, which by its definition is 2 years ago, because here in 2024, the last tax return you filed was your 2023. Tax return that you filed in 2023.
Right.
So they look 2 years back, and if your income is above certain thresholds, you'll get a letter, usually around Thanksgiving each year, that says, hey, congratulations, you make too much money, you're going to pay more for Medicare next year. Now, if your income has declined since the number they are referencing in your last available return, and that decline has occurred for a life-changing event, such as retirement, reduced hours, marriage, divorce, widowhood, you just fill out the form that says you're going to pay more and say, hey, I want to appeal this. My income has gone down. Now, in some cases, your income has gone up. And you say, hey, well, that's not fair. I converted a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. Well, that will boost your income for 1 year. And as a result, you will have to pay higher Medicare premiums. But if it's a one-time event, you're only going to have to pay those higher premiums for a year. And if your income declines the following year, so will your Medicare premiums in the future.
So I think I'm thinking about this couple. So let's say that we did a massive Roth conversion this year, and it was also a retirement year. We could apply for the waiver in a couple of years on this year. Is that a good strategy, or should we just go ahead and apply for a waiver on the 2022 income when it would actually be less in 2022 than what his retirement, what his earnings were this year plus his Roth conversion this year?
Again, the key is, is the income that is affecting this year's Medicare premium, has that gone down since the number Social Security is referencing?
Yeah.
If the number hasn't gone down, you don't have an appeal. If your number has gone down, then you have a legitimate reason to appeal. I think you're right to make the massive Roth IRA conversion all in 1 year. In this case, you're ripping off the Band-Aid. They're going to have to pay higher income taxes and probably higher Medicare premiums, but it's only going to be that year. If in future years they're not making future Roth conversions, therefore boosting their income, then they're going to get into a more normal Medicare bracket. You have to look at the numbers and say, can we spread this out over a couple of years? Is that going to cost me a lot in taxes and Medicare premiums, or do we just take the hit all at once?
Yeah, and you can apply for this more than once. I mean, if you retired,
correct,
you could apply. Then you had a death of a spouse, you could apply again for a waiver. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios. Like you said, these life-changing events. You just have to know the rules, but don't just sit there and take it, folks. If you're getting whacked with higher Medicare premiums, take a peek and say, hey, am I eligible for this? And the cool thing is they literally fill it out, mail it in, and here we mail it to our local office, which is like 2 blocks from my office. It's reviewed by people that I know, and they do look for the opportunity. They do. We had a guest about a month or two ago, Jolene Dixon. She heads up our local office, a friend of mine, and she said, well, you know, we really try hard to make sure that we look at everything to reduce your premium if possible. So these are real people on the other side helping you. They're not trying to put up a roadblock or a barrier to lower your Medicare premiums. Mary Beth, any final thoughts before I go? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of myself. I am 69 this year. I'll turn 70 in December. My husband is 72. At the end of December was my last newspaper column. And that was a substantial source of my income. So I'm not fully retired, but I have reduced my workload hours and reduced my income. So when I got my IRMA letter, I, you know, sent all that information. Now, my calculations said, well, I shouldn't be in the third IRMA bracket. There's a total of six of them. I should probably be in the second. And I appealed it, and I expected it to be reduced, but Social Security totally wiped out my IRMA premium for this year. Now, I fully expect a year or two down the road when my tax returns catch up with them, they will calculate that I'm going to owe them some money retroactively, but not as much as I would have had I not appealed. And then if I retire fully in another year or two or beyond, then once again, I could appeal that IRMA premium to say, hey, I've retired. That's grounds for appeal. My income has declined since the number you were using to calculate my premium.
Mary Beth Franklin, everyone. What a pleasure, Mary Beth, it is to have you on. Thank you for your friendship and your continued support of this program. Folks, go to marybethfranklin.com. Grab her Maximizing Social Security Benefit ebook. It's awesome. It's well worth the money. I don't remember. It's like, how much is it, Mary Beth?
$29.95.
All right. All right. I love it.
MaryBethFranklin.com.
There you go. Mary Beth, thank you so much. And I'll keep in touch with you. And congratulations on your new, kind of your new reinvention of quasi-retirement. Keep skiing. I know that keeps you young as well. And tell your hubby hi for me. And we'll talk to you again really, really soon.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me as a guest.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, wrap it up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Mary Beth is so on top of things. And 69, going to be 70, marybethfranklin.com. You know, she retired from doing podcasts, but you can still, and that's when she was with Investment News, but that just ended. But you can go back and listen to the Retirement Repair Shop when she was there. And that content is still very, very relevant. I mean, just like today's show, I'm going to keep that in the bank. And maybe what I'll do if I'm out of town sometime, I'll re-record an intro, re-record this exit, and then we'll replay the Mary Beth show, unless we have some major Social Security reform, which I don't think we will anytime soon. This content is completely relevant into the foreseeable future. So, again, very grateful to Mary Beth Franklin for being on the show. So, again, marybethfranklin.com, just less than $30. You can get her ebook, Maximizing Social Security Benefits. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Medicare as well. She has some stuff out there on Medicare. And as she mentioned in the last segment, if you're overpaying, you think, for Medicare premiums, take a look to see if you're eligible for one of those waivers. And it's super easy to fill out. You mail it in. It's Form 521, I believe. No, 521 is when you repay it. I forget the form number. It doesn't really matter. Just go on and say Medicare waiver, and it'll print off, fill it out, send it in. I hope everyone has a great weekend. It's Little Five weekend. Enjoy it. Stay out of the way of the kids. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.